In August 1987, something in 27-year-old Michael Ryan snapped.
As he walked towards the kiosk, he raised a gun and fired several shots through the glass,
causing him to embark upon a devastating killing spree on the streets of his hometown of Hungerford.
Police emergency.
There's a gunman up here. He's going mad.
He walked along and just shot people that he met.
He gunned down friends.
There were spent cartridges from the Kalashnikov on the ground.
Neighbours.
She was standing in her mum's kitchen saying, "I've been shot."
And family.
This is her son. And she says, "No, don't shoot me."
As the clock ticked.
He said, "Your dad's been shot and your mum's been shot."
The body count rose.
16 killed, 16 injured. Nobody knew what was going on.
And with it the question, what had caused this man to turn so viciously on those he was closest to?
I knew that if this man could see me, he'd kill me.
Hungerford, a small historic market town, sitting on the borders of southeast England and southwest England, has a history dating back to the early 10th century.
Well, Hungerford is quite a small place, but friendly, a quiet market town.
Growing up in Hungerford was a very close community. Everyone seemed to know one another.
If you ran out of sugar, you just went to your next door neighbour, and if you had a problem, it was only a door knock away.
Over the years, its population of almost 7,000 has lived a relatively peaceful existence. However, on one day in 1987, the calm of this commuter town was shattered. Suddenly, through the actions of just one man, this sleepy town became headline news across the globe. On August the 19th, 1987, a local man turned a private arsenal of weaponry on the very people he'd lived amongst all his life. During a killing spree that had so far lasted 6.5 hours, 16 people had died and 15 others had been injured. Tactical firearms officer Richard Auger received a call to attend.
We knew we were going to an armed incident, absolutely definite, and that it was a gun job. And this was a big gun job because so many parties had been scrambled down there.
In Hungerford, crouched in a corner of a deserted school classroom, hid the killer.
I remember when the message first came through and they diverted us to Hungerford police station, looking at my partner and saying, "Where on earth's Hungerford?"
Dressed in army fatigues and a bullet-resistant waistcoat, the fugitive remained armed with two guns. One, a high-powered assault rifle, had just fired 84 bullets.
Police emergency.
There's somebody firing a gun up the road.
Yeah.
And I've seen women run down the road screaming.
I was convinced that we were going to a bank siege, but it couldn't have been further from my mind that there was an active shooter going around killing everyone.
We've got three people shot here. Yeah, one is very, very seriously ill. We can't get any ambulance anywhere near any of the casualties. He is still firing indiscriminately.
By 5:26 p.m. that evening, after an exhaustive manhunt, the killer was finally cornered.
We've got him now, and he's either going to die or we're going to get him in custody, because that's the way these sieges end up.
In an attempt to understand what had led to the shocking spree on the streets of Hungerford, police made contact with the man barricaded inside the school classroom.
Some of the dialogue exchanged with the police while he was holed up in the school give us useful clues to his state of mind and his possible intentions. He did say some bizarre things. He'd said that Hungerford must be a bit of a mess, and that none of this would have happened if his car would have started.
The mess being referred to had in fact been caused by himself, 27-year-old local man, Michael Robert Ryan.
It was a rampage. There's no other word to describe what went on.
He appeared to be shooting to kill. He walked along and just shot people that he met for no reason at all.
he was pretty much shooting at most people who came near him or within range of his firepower.
There's no logic to what he's doing, and all around there's absolute chaos.
We were right slap bang in the middle of this nightmare, and we were part of it.
I was amazed to see a fleet of ambulances, fire engines, police cars, all lined up in the high street.
We had an active shooter who was killing police officers, who was killing members of the public randomly, who had better firepower than us, and we were expected to bring that person into custody.
The 19th of August, 1987, 12 p.m. Savernake Forest, 10 miles west of Hungerford. Almost 7 hours before he would find himself barricaded into a classroom surrounded by police, Michael Ryan sat waiting amongst the trees of Savernake Forest.
People wander around here all the time. And it's a really nice, there's a picnic area in another part of the forest. So it is pretty well a well-known area for people to come and spend some leisure time.
But for Michael Ryan, the secluded forest offered the opportunity for a different kind of recreation.
Ryan was known to dress up in paramilitary camouflage, and he would often hang about in the woods near to where he lived. He would stalk and follow individuals. There's no evidence to suggest he would do them any harm or that he interacted, but it is entirely possible, of course, that this could have been a sexual outlet for him and that he may have engaged in sexual fantasies.
Meters away from where Ryan waited, 33-year-old Susan Godfrey and her two children had just arrived for a family picnic.
She was on her way to a grandparent's birthday party. The suggestion of her father, because she wanted to take the boys for a picnic on the way there, he suggested Savernake Forest was a good place to come. She pulled into a slight clearing off of Grand Avenue and got the children out of the car.
For reasons unknown, as the family prepared to begin their picnic, Michael Ryan decided to cross the line from fantasy into reality.
She was probably in the process of getting her children out of the car. At that stage, Michael Ryan would have approached her, and he was armed. He put the children back in the car.
Carrying a ground sheet, an armed Ryan marched Sue Godfrey deep into the woods. What happened next remains uncertain, but what is undisputed is that it marked the beginning of one of the UK's biggest ever killing sprees. In August 1987, the sleepy market town of Hungerford held its breath as a heavily armed resident stalked the streets, gunning down anyone who crossed his path. 17 people would die, and many more were injured, in a killing spree that created unimaginable terror, shattering the tranquility of one summer afternoon. 27-year-old Michael Ryan's ruthless rampage had begun in the Savernake Forest, 10 miles west of Hungerford. Early in the afternoon of Wednesday, the 19th of August, Sue Godfrey and her two young children had just arrived at a local beauty spot for a family picnic. As they were getting out of their car, an armed Michael Ryan approached them.
It's very hard to say with any certainty what happened, but we do know that her two children were left strapped in their car seats while Ryan took Miss Godfrey deeper into the forest.
The assumption has to be that this was going to be an attempted rape. There's no indication of robbery. There's no indication of any other kind of crime going on.
He may have made a sexual approach to Miss Godfrey, to which he may have declined or even fought back from.
His lack of coping mechanism meant that he just went nuts with his guns. He shot her repeatedly. There's no other explanation that this was an act of pure rage.
Detective Inspector John Spiller remembers being one of the first to arrive at the scene that day.
We walked up here, and on the right-hand side here, near the base of a tree, we found the body of Mrs. Godfrey. We believe that she may have tripped over a partially submerged fence, and the possibility is she was trying to escape. To see someone who's been shot in that way and just left in the forest is very moving, quite distressing.
Michael Ryan immediately fled the scene, leaving the children unharmed and still safely strapped into their mother's car.
At this point, his adrenaline would have been racing. He would have been on a physical rush. He needed to get away from the scene and get away from there very quickly.
Throughout his life, Michael Ryan had done little of consequence to raise any concerns with the local police. So what was the catalyst that caused him to commit such an unthinkable crime that morning? Born on the 18th of May, 1960, Michael Ryan was an only child, warmly received into the world. His father, Alfred Henry, in his mid-50s at the time, was delighted to have fathered a child so late in life. And his mother, Dorothy, over 20 years his junior, doted on her new arrival.
They kept themselves to themselves. But when you saw Dorothy, she would actually talk to you, have a good chinwag, and she worked at the local school.
I knew his mother, Dorothy, very well, and I knew his father. Very, very nice people indeed, both of them.
Father Alfred, an apparently strict clerk of works, was happy to let Dorothy take charge of Ryan's upbringing.
First time I met Michael was opposite primary school, age 5 or 6 years old. And at the time, very, very quiet lad indeed.
Michael, he would say hello to you if you said hello first.
Didn't seem to sort of mix too much with other people. He didn't really get involved in a lot of the sports like most of the kids did. Basically just sort of kept himself to himself.
Those who knew the Ryans recall how indulgent they were towards their only child. Whatever the young boy wanted, he would get.
The neighbours and people who knew the family referred to him as a mummy's boy. I mean, it seems that both his parents had indulged him.
Well, he was the only child, and I would say a very spoilt one.
Contrary to other spree killers that we know about, there didn't seem to be any behavioural yellow flags or warning signs in Ryan's background. His parents' marriage was relatively healthy and normal, with no problems. This was a completely uneventful existence.
The 19th of August, 1987, 12:30 p.m. Golden Arrow Service Station, Froxfield. Having fled the first murder scene in Savernack Forest, Ryan stopped to buy some petrol on the A4 before continuing his journey to his home in Hungerford. As a regular customer to the Golden Arrow Service Station, attendant Jacob Dean was used to serving Ryan.
Michael Ryan would have driven in from this direction and parked at one of the pumps here. The kiosk is in the far right corner there, and obviously Mrs. Dean was probably didn't know him by name, but was familiar with him because of his regular use of the petrol station to buy a small amount of petrol. The difference on this day was he actually spent a long time filling this car up with petrol, almost it was brimming over. He then filled a petrol can up with petrol and then obviously secured it.
He waited until the only other person in the petrol station had driven off and casually walked up to the kiosk, aimed and fired.
Behind the glass, attendant Jacob Dean had dived for cover.
There was glass everywhere. He then walked into the kiosk. You can only imagine what she was feeling. He leant over the counter and aimed a gun. Now, that gun was either empty or it jammed, no one will ever know. And he then left the kiosk, got in the car and drove off.
It was an incredibly lucky escape because she would have been the second victim on that day.
Having already murdered one and attempted to murder another, Ryan fled the scene once again.
We have to assume that at this stage he was planning on making an escape.
With a full tank of petrol, as well as a filled canister, Ryan continued on towards Southview in Hungerford, to the home he'd lived in all his life.
He may have assumed that he would be able to hide out, that he would be able to go somewhere and hide from the police.
Growing up on Southview was a comfortable existence for Ryan. His mother reportedly doted on him and continued to indulge his every whim.
I can't remember him playing too much as the years went on, as we began our teenage years. We used to have a mess around, you know, here and there, you know, play about, but really didn't really go out a lot as far as I know.
By his late teens, Ryan remained socially awkward with his peers. Often described as sullen and a loner, Ryan immersed himself in a growing passion for the military, and in particular, guns.
Ryan took some comfort in reading about and fantasizing about military and paramilitary lifestyles. He began to acquire more military-style clothing and camouflage clothing, and also began to take more of an interest in military weapons.
They had a small holding in there, at then the bottom end of their garden, where they had some barns and kept a few cows in. But I remember we got in the barn one day and he started firing at the barn door with an air rifle.
To indulge his hobby further, Ryan joined a local gun club, quickly moving from pistols to high-powered rifles, whilst his own deadly collection grew rapidly.
He was quite well known in the Hungerford area, particularly for shooting, and I think there was he'd won some awards for shooting. The Tunnel Club was an authorised shooting range, so there would be members. People obviously practised their skills in shooting, so they were obviously shooting different weapons from different distances.
His interest in survivalism is apparent, really, in just the full range of equipment that he collected. I mean, he was practically an army surplus store. He had flak jackets, he had balaclavas, face paint, camouflage clothes, you know, the guns, the knives, and he often carried these around in his car.
He had no major life stories or experiences, and he had very little to offer people by way of social interaction. With guns, with collecting, he didn't need to interact. His shooting at the gun club would do the talking for him.
The 19th of August, 1987, 12:45 p.m. Southview, Hungerford. Less than an hour into his killing spree, Michael Ryan pulled up outside the house that he shared with his mother and had lived in for his entire life.
He arrives back at his house from the petrol station, pulls up, goes in the house and collects up all the additional bits of kit that he's going to need for what we presume to be an escape attempt.
His mother isn't at home, but he does seem to pack two holdalls with his guns and his ammunition into the car.
He loads the car and decides he has to get rid of the evidence that he's left behind about himself. So he takes a petrol can that we assume he filled at the petrol station and douses his house and sets fire to it. Then jumps back in the car to make his escape and the car doesn't start. What he does then is effectively a repeat of what he did in the forest. He turns the gun on the object of his anger. He rakes the car that he loved, by all accounts, with gunfire.
He realises he isn't able to escape, he's not able to leave Hungerford, and he's now stranded there on foot.
With nowhere to run, Michael Ryan made a decision that would lead to unimaginable violence, making the name of Hungerford synonymous with tragedy.
There is no escape now for him. He's still got his guns, and he turns then and starts shooting at his neighbours. People that have known him since he was 2 years old.
Two doors down from where Ryan now stood was long-term family friend Ronald Mason. Busily creosoting his fence, he was struck by six bullets and killed instantly. His wife Sheila was the next victim, with a single bullet to the head.
We don't know what's going through his mind. He's committed himself to a course of action that doesn't make any logical sense to us.
Next in the firing line was Marjorie Jackson. Shooting through the window into her home, Ryan hit her in the back as she tried to dive for cover. Fortunately, she would survive her injury, but anyone in Ryan's eyeline, old or young, was now a target.
At 5 to 1, I remembered it clearly because my son had just gone to the local shop, which was sort of just 3 minutes away, and I suddenly heard glass break, and my son and my daughter just ran in. And I remember my son saying, Lisa's been hurt. I thought to myself that she's fallen into glass.
Several doors away, Sylvia Pascoe's 14-year-old neighbour, Lisa Mildenhall, had been playing with other children in the street when Ryan turned his attention on them, firing into the group.
I went out the back door. I went through to Lisa, and she was standing in her mum's kitchen saying, I've been shot.
Hello, can I have an ambulance, please? I can't tell you what the problem is, but there's an awful lot of blood.
Lisa had been shot 4 times and was bleeding heavily from a leg wound. Outside, as his house burnt to the ground, Ryan continued to prowl up and down Southview, shooting as he went.
He's not screaming, he's not shouting, he's not saying anything at all. And into this mess drives his mother.
On the 19th of August 1987, 27-year-old Michael Ryan embarked on a ruthless killing spree that began with the brutal murder of an innocent mother out picnicking with her 2 young children. 2 hours later, in his hometown of Hungerford, Ryan had nowhere to run and had begun shooting anyone who crossed his path. With 7 dead and 7 more injured, it seemed there was no stopping the crazed killer, when amidst all the chaos, the one person he truly respected appeared. His mother, Dorothy.
She emerges from her car. There are dead bodies all over the place. Her son's car has been shot up.
She arrived to see her house on fire, and she was completely distraught and, as one would expect, very emotional and very angry.
Somebody tries to stop her going in, but she pushes past. This is her son. She's heard to go up to him and speak to him, and she says, no, don't shoot me.
In front of him stood the only person he loved, but Ryan didn't hesitate as his sickening spree continued.
Ryan shot her twice at point-blank range, and she died right in front of him. The reason behind this, again, we'll never fully understand. It's an incredibly irrational behaviour.
In a matter of minutes since opening fire on his neighbours, Michael Ryan had killed 7 and injured a further 7. Casually, he then made his way out of Southview and across the common behind the houses.
Police emergency.
We have a shooting over Hungerford Common.
Across town, a local off-duty PC, Trevor Wainwright, was unaware of the unfolding events happening on his own doorstep.
Got a phone call from my wife, who said, I don't know what's happening. She said, but there's shots being fired across our garden. I said, what?
PC Wainwright immediately headed back towards the scene of the trouble.
As I came across Hungerford Common, I saw a group of people that were lying around a clump of trees. At the same time, I could see smoke and flames coming up from what was now Michael Ryan's house. And they knew me, because they knew I was the town poppy. And they said, well, someone got mad with a gun, and we think a policeman's been shot. I mean, that shook me.
PC Roger Brereton, a Newbury-based traffic policeman, had been shot and killed by Michael Ryan only moments earlier. In a bid to contain the area, PC Brereton had been dispatched to Southview, only to run straight into Ryan. The gunman sprayed the patrol car with 24 bullets, four of which hit a defenceless PC Brereton.
He'd been shot dead, which upset me tremendously, because Roger had worked at Hungerford before. He was a good friend of mine, and we shared the same birthday, would you believe? Now, the irony is, it was my day off, it had been the day before, I would have been the first police officer at the scene.
Another cruel twist of fate that day would later emerge. PC Wainwright, in his role as a local policeman, had vetted Ryan the previous year for an upgrade to his firearms licence. This permitted Ryan to own the high-powered weapons he later went on to use during the massacre. As PC Trevor Wainwright continued on to the local police station to assist in the unfolding drama, the true nature and scale of the horrific events had begun to emerge.
When we get a call, we know something has happened, and there is an energy that goes through you when you get these calls, you know, whether it's in the middle of the night or, you know, when you are called to gather as a tactical team, you know something has gone wrong and they need your skills.
Although still some distance away, Richard Auger of the Thames Valley Tactical Firearms Team knew that an armed response was urgently required.
So I'm scanning the radios, trying to get information and relay it to my colleague with regard to what we're going to be facing.
Having made his way along the common, Ryan fired into the back garden of Betty Tolliday, seriously injuring her. Moving on, he approached the Hungerford Memorial Gardens, where he rounded on 26-year-old Francis Butler and 30-year-old taxi driver Marcus Bernard, shooting them both dead.
Maybe it's the sheer violence of that incident, but for a second, Michael Ryan pauses. He seemed to throw the AK-47 on the ground. He looks bewildered. He's, you know, maybe the full enormity of what he had done is starting to dawn on him. But it doesn't last long. He picks the gun up and continues.
Meanwhile, police attempted to place the area into lockdown.
Police had closed every entrance into Hungerford, so there was no way you could drive in. At every entrance to Hungerford, there were police cars and the road was blocked completely.
There was a lot of vehicles around this area because, of course, nothing was allowed in. And the first cordon was at this junction here, which is going up towards the police station.
The police are trying to block roads leading into Southview. They're turning cars away, but they're not telling people why. Some people have been turned away, decide I'm going to get to my destination. And take back roads, and then they find themselves in the middle of a war zone.
With 9 dead and 8 more wounded in Hungerford, Ryan continued his killing spree, making his way slowly up Priory Avenue, wounding another victim as he went.
In Ryan's case, he was pretty much shooting at most people who came near him or within range of his firepower. He would shoot at people in cars, he would shoot into houses, he would shoot at older children, teenagers, as well as old people and police officers as well. So his was one of the true indiscriminate shootings.
As Ryan continued up Priory Avenue, approaching from the other direction were Douglas and Kathleen Wainwright. The couple were on their way to visit their son, PC Trevor Wainwright. But unbeknownst to them, PC Wainwright had reported for duty at the local police station.
There were still a lot of people coming to the police station, and the next thing I knew, or I can recall, before, you know, I had great visions of going out with the armed guys, but I got called into the sergeant's office, and the sergeant said to me, Sergeant, funny enough, Sergeant Ryan, he said, Trevor, he said, I don't know how to tell you this. I said, what? He said, your dad's been shot, and your mum's been shot. And I completely was oblivious that my mum and dad were coming to visit me that day from Kent.
I didn't realise that they were coming to Hungerford that day. I knew that they'd just sold their house in Kent and they were coming to look at property in Swindon. They would have rung me once they were here, I suppose, and they just drove right into it.
En route to the estate agents, the Wainwrights had planned a surprise visit to their son and his family. They were almost at his house when they came across Ryan.
They'd driven up through the high street, but because of fire engine blocking the normal route, and they weren't aware of what was going on, my dad knew the back way in, and he drove up the high street and around the estate. And as he was going to drive in to Priory Road, he saw Michael Ryan walking towards them, and he just aimed a gun at them and shot into the car. Shot my dad in the head. He obviously died instantly. Shot my mother, and the car stopped. She got out. And she saw Michael Ryan reload the weapon, and she thought, oh no, he's going to shoot me again. But with that, he walked off and shot someone else. You know, that they were coming to visit me, and they drove straight into it. And I couldn't believe it. And I just prayed. I'm not religious, but I prayed.
As the shooting continued, it was now the turn of the police to take back control of the situation. Desperate to stop the carnage, the tactical firearms team were finally deployed onto the streets Michael Ryan had turned into his own personal shooting ground. The hunt was on to catch the killer.
This is at Hungerford Common. We've come up from where the police station was into Hungerford Common, and the team hugged this hedge line here as we moved up towards the alleyway that leads into Southview. We then set up almost like a defensive position there, and that's where we stayed and had the discussion about what are we going to do next. And this is where we saw our first victim, who was lying probably halfway between this gate and Southview itself.
As the spree continued, it was still unclear as to where Ryan actually was. Slowly moving into Southview, Tactical Firearms Officer Richard Auger and his team were the first to witness the devastating carnage Ryan had left behind.
We came through and began to move tactically down the road, coming across Ryan's mother, who was dead outside number 9. This is where his mother was lying, just here, and then it must have been about here where the senator was, and then behind the senator the Toyota. But one other interesting thing is that, and it's something that just comes as you arrive back, is that there were just spent cartridges from the Kalashnikov on the grounds, and we also found like magazines full of ammunition that that he'd obviously dropped. So he obviously had a lot more firepower and ammunition, and whatever he was planning was
certainly going to be probably a longer shootout than actually turned out to be the case.
Continuing along Priory Avenue and onto Tarrant's Hill, Ryan shot a further three people, wounding two and killing one. Carpenter and local driver Eric Vardy was killed when Ryan shot him through the windscreen of his moving van.
Although Ryan seems to shoot indiscriminately at people who come his way, he does also let some people off. One eyewitness reported seeing Ryan put his finger to his lips as if to signify a shh sound and let the individual get away. Other people encountered Ryan in their garden or in a nearby alleyway, and Ryan levelled his gun at them and on one occasion said the word bang but didn't pull the trigger. So we know again that he had no particular victim type, but he did exert control over who he allowed to live and who he killed.
By now, Ryan had reached the end of Tarrant's Hill. To his left, the busy Hungerford High Street was only metres away.
By this point, the helicopter has been circling overhead, but it's not clear that they even know where Michael Ryan is. He's got free rein, effectively.
And that was perhaps one of the biggest worries of all, not knowing what was happening.
It was market day, and as such, Ryan would have been aware that the high street would be full of potential targets.
I was just worried about my own parents and the family, and I just could not believe it, what was happening in such a little small market town.
With 12 people already dead and another 12 wounded, police were still one step behind catching a spree killer, intent on causing as much bloodshed as possible. On the 19th of August 1987, after what appeared to be a failed attempt at sexual assault, 27-year-old Michael Ryan embarked on a terrifying killing spree across his hometown of Hungerford. Friends, neighbours and even his own mother died as he roamed the streets hunting for potential targets. Less than 2 hours into his rampage, and police were unaware that the trigger-happy killer was now only metres away from Hungerford's busy high street. However, instead of turning left into the packed weekly market, he headed right down the quieter Priory Road. No one is sure why he chose to avoid the crowds.
His adrenaline will have been pumping now for a long time. He will also have been feeling tired and possibly confused. If one looks at a map of the area that Ryan covered, you can see that he seems to be wandering aimlessly. Although he does a lot of walking, he doesn't get very far away.
Ryan continued on down Priory Road, shooting as he went. 22-year-old Sandra Hill, wheelchair-bound Myrtle Gibbs and her husband Victor were all shot dead as the carnage continued.
Around his neighbourhood, there are many fields and green areas where he could have possibly increased his chances of making a good getaway. But instead of getting away cross-country, he pretty much chose to stand and fight in the middle of the streets.
34-year-old Ian Playle would be the 16th fatality of Ryan's sickening spree. Like others that day, he had unwittingly driven straight into the unfolding drama, unaware of the extreme threat posed by the lone gunman. Shortly before 2 p.m, Michael Ryan was reported approaching the rear of a local school, the same school he had attended as a pupil almost a decade before.
The police are on the scene fairly quickly. They post officers at the front and back of the building.
So we were still moving tactically, still covering each other, got up to inside the school, and then we were then deployed into containment positions to surround the school and to really bolt that down so that Ryan could not get out.
He would have had a tactical advantage once he broke into that building. He knew where all the rooms were, the ways in and out, the vantage points. The police would not necessarily have that information to hand.
It's interesting that he chooses to go there. In some ways, maybe it was a reminder of earlier times for him. Maybe it was somewhere that was connected to his own life.
Maybe he'd also realised that he didn't have it in him to be the soldier the military warrior that he'd fantasized about, and maybe now he was just tired, fatigued, and needed a rest, and perhaps the school was going to give him some temporary respite where he'd be safe.
At 5:26 p.m, police confirmed Ryan's exact location within the building. As the gunman was still thought to be armed, the units kept their distance, sealing off the area around the school.
Once we knew he was in the school and once the containment was on, it was just absolute relief. I could see that light at the end of the tunnel.
He did throw a white cloth out of the window to suggest he'd surrendered, and he was able to have a dialogue with the armed response officers there.
There's evidence that maybe he was looking at his options. He's asking, you know, what's going to happen to me? And again, he keeps coming back to his mother.
He did ask if his mum was OK. Clearly, he'd shot her at point-blank range, so he must have known she wasn't OK.
There may have been some regret there. You know, he said, Hungerford's a mess, if only my car had started. We don't know whether that's regret for the victims and what he's done, or whether it's regret that he's stuck where he is and that if only he'd managed to get away, things would have been all right.
I think that provides us with some strong evidence that this spree was not planned. It was an accidental or incidental spree. He didn't want to engage in one, but because he had no route of escape, because he'd been a bit of a military fantasist, he felt that this was a way to go out.
And then he asks the time, it's 6:45, and then moments later we hear the shot ring out.
At 6:45 p.m, just over 6 hours after his killing spree began, Michael Ryan shot himself using his own 9mm pistol.
I saw him with the gun in his hand, having taken his own life. I felt really sorry for him. I felt he looked pathetic, lost. And maybe that's exactly what he was.
In all, Michael Ryan took the lives of 16 innocent people that day. By making himself the 17th casualty, he also took away from those who wanted the opportunity to find out why he had committed such a callous crime.
When I heard that he'd been shot, I was relieved. I'd have liked to have known the answer why, but we'll never know that now. But I'm glad that my money's not keeping him alive in a prison somewhere.
To me, Michael Ryan was that explosion of rage that really shattered the illusion that things like this don't happen in the UK, that spree killings are a US phenomenon and that we're safe in the UK. Not true.
Ryan's spree was unprecedented. The UK had never seen anything like this before. That it happened to an individual who didn't have a criminal background, that it happened in the middle of rural, leafy Berkshire, not in any city, was a complete shock and surprise. It really opened the eyes of the UK to the potential that spree killers could strike anywhere in any town and could have a completely nondescript, non-criminal background. For the next 10 years, this was the only hallmark spree killing that the UK had endured.
Following the horrific shooting spree in Hungerford, new gun laws were brought in banning private ownership of semi-automatic and pump-action rifles in the United Kingdom.
The day started off as a lovely sunny day, and in 4 hours, the whole place changed by one man who we will never know what triggered it, what made him do it, and he changed lots of people's lives.
I think it'll never, ever, ever be forgotten. Obviously, everyone wants to move on, but I just can't see, you know, it ever being forgotten.
There's no way I'll forget what happened. It happened 28 years ago, which is a long, long time, but it's still fresh in my memory. And it always will be. It will live with us forever.